Our first reading is from Job, and I want to give you a little background. You kind of know the story, but I'll remind you. Job was a good, righteous man, wealthy. He had many children, great wife, flocks, land. He had everything. And up in God's court, they're talking about people on earth, and God says to Satan, "Do you see my good servant Job there? What a holy man he is." And Satan says, "Yeah, but take away everything he has and he will curse you." And so it's a story. This is not literally true. God wouldn't do this, but God says, "Okay, he's in your hands." And so Satan changes everything. He loses his wife. All of his children die. He loses his flocks, his land. He's absolutely destitute. He has nothing. He's alone. And he's struggling with why this happened to him. And so he has three friends. And like any good friends, they're trying to help him work through his grief. And they're trying to come up with explanations about his suffering. And basically, their theories have to do with the prevailing theory at the time in Israel, that if you are suffering, it's because you have sinned, you've done some kind of infraction, and you're being punished by God for it. But as the story goes, Job just keeps professing his innocence. He says, "Well, yes, I could understand that if I had sinned, if I had done something wrong, but I am innocent. I haven't done anything." And so he finally rails against God. He doesn't curse God, but he challenges God. "How can this have happened to me?" And basically God says back to him, "Were you there when I created the universe, the cosmos? Were you there when I separated the sea from the dry land? Who are you to talk to me about how things are?" And Job says, "You're right. I take it back. I spoke once, but I'll never speak again." And eventually everything gets restored. But right in the middle of the story is what we heard this morning, at Job's lowest point. And he talks about his suffering as so meaningless, and his days are short and his nights are long, he's sleepless. And you know how it is when you're the only one in the house that's awake, it just seems like the night goes on forever, waiting for the dawn. And the last line of the passage we heard, "I shall not know happiness again." Well, pretty bleak. Then we contrast that with the gospel story, where Jesus enters into that meaningless, hopeless situation of humanity, enters into our humanity and starts healing it and fixing it. And so the casting out of demons, you know, the demons were in control of the world, but now their reign is ending and the reign of God is coming in. And so Jesus casting out demons is a symbol of that. Everybody's sick. Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with a fever. He heals her, and then he heals everybody in the town. You know, the word gets spread around and everybody comes. He heals the whole town. So it's a wonderful, miraculous story. Interesting about Simon's mother-in-law, she lay sick with a fever. Now, in those days, if you were in bed with a fever, you could be near death. And I think with COVID-19, that makes more sense to us than it did a year ago, because we're more conscious of the danger of fever than we used to be. In modern times, you take aspirin or something and you can get rid of a fever pretty easily. But in those days, she probably was very near death. And in fact, the story says that Jesus grasped her by the hand and raised her up. And the Greek word used for raising her is the same word for his own resurrection. So in other words, he's raising her from the dead. He's reversing the hopeless situation of humanity that is locked in death, and he's offering us eternal life. But Jesus, even after he heals the whole town, he goes off by himself to recharge by being in communion with the Father in prayer. And the next day they're looking for him and they say, we've been looking all over for you. We've got more people sick. And Jesus says, well, I must go on to other towns and villages and heal them. In other words, Jesus doesn't take care of all of it. He doesn't heal the whole world, even though we would like him to. It's frustrating to us that despite the fact that 2,000 years ago, salvation was already given to us on the cross, and the reign of God has entered in and has conquered the reign of Satan and the demons, and yet we still suffer, and life is still unfair, and life throws things at us that we don't deserve. We didn't do anything. We're kind of like Job. How is this happening to me? And we often try to console family members and friends by being like the three friends of Job, you know, trying to come up with some reason, some rationale for why this is happening to you. And in desperation, one of the things we often say is, well, it must be God's will. But that's not really true, is it? God wills our suffering? No. The answer that Jesus gives to the problem of human suffering is to not answer it. What he does is he enters into it and shares it with us. He shares our weakness. He shares our suffering and our griefs and our sorrows and our losses. He walks the journey with us. And that's what really heals. Magic fixes, and there's the temptation in our humanity that we want to fix things instead of just listening. And the best thing you can do for somebody who's suffering is to listen to them, to really hear them, to recognize something that's already happened to you that may be similar enough that you can identify with them. We have wonderful words for that. Compassion is to have passion with. Sympathy is to have pathos, grief with. These words are built into our language because this is what really heals. So we can become Christ to one another by listening, by remembering our own sufferings and sharing them, walking the journey with someone. I can't fix your problem, but I'll suffer with you. Now, Paul, in that second reading, is doing exactly that. He's describing his own Christ-likeness. He says, I preach the gospel not for money, not for glory or fame, not for any recompense whatsoever other than what it does for you and for me. And so, to the weak, I have become weak so that I might heal them. To the suffering, I have suffered so that I might walk that journey with them and maybe save some of them. In other words, he has become Christ. He's offered his life. He's spending himself for the gospel. And what he's telling them is, don't be feeling sorry for me because I'm happy. This has made me who I am. This has made me fulfilled. I gave up everything for this because this is the prize. This is the pearl of great price. This is my destiny, and I'm happy in it. And so that's why Jesus is always saying in the Gospels, to lose is to gain. The only way to win your life is to lose your life. The only way to receive is to give. And so Paul has discovered that. He's discovered that the more he gives, the more he gets back. That's the mystery of salvation. And the more we listen to one another, the more we share each other's griefs and sorrows, the more fulfilled we are. We're not just doing it for them, but in losing ourselves for them, we gain ourselves.